Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. In a few moments, I'll be sharing with you one of the many interviews I did during the recent 3-week-long October Synod for Africa, which brought together more than 200 African bishops to discuss issues connected to reconciliation, justice, and peace, often in the presence of the Holy Father himself. But getting back to my guest, what you're about to hear is less of an interview and more of an opportunity to give voice to a bishop who lives in an area of post-war Sudan where massacres are taking place as we speak and where Christians are targeted in a special way. Sadly, to the extent that in August, Christians were abducted from church and many of them crucified. Christians precisely from this bishop's diocese. He's Bishop of Tombura Yambio in southern Sudan, and his name is Edward Hiboro Kusala. I began by asking him about these dramatic events. Let's listen to his reply.
In Western Equatoria, where my diocese is based, foreign rebels who are at the border of Sudan, based in Congo, and they are Uganda-based rebels, the LRA, Lord's Resistance Army. And they've been in the area now for the last 4 years, and their presence in this part of South Sudan and part of Congo and the Republic of Central Africa has been disastrous for that part of Western Equatoria or Western part of Southern Sudan. And it has caused a wide range of displacement, and many people have been killed and abducted. Now, the event that you have just asked me for is one of the many killings and brutal destruction of lives in Western Equatoria. That happened actually on the 13th of August. The Christians were preparing for prayers in one of my parishes. It's Izo Parish. And in the evening, that was for evening prayer and evening services, the soldiers came in, the rebels entered the church and got the people at prayer. And people thought first this were the right army, they were Sudanese army, but they discovered that because they were picking young people, they didn't want, first of all, to make problems. They decided to pick young people, young girls, young boys. And one of the persons remarked, "These are not our soldiers, these are the LRA, these are the LRA from Uganda." And then there was a commotion, and it began to shoot up at the wall, and they shot everywhere. And at the very moment, they took with them over 27 people, and 17 were actually kept with them as they went with them into the forest. Out of those 17, 7 of them were killed, and hanged up and in the form of crucifixion. And one of the two couldn't die on spot. They got him alive. They brought him all the way to Yambio. Afterward, he died. And 3 days after, again, in one of my parishes, which is in Zara, 15 miles away from Yambio, again, they abducted 12 people, and 6 of them were crucified. They were nailed to the ground with a piece of wood, like sort of crucifixion. And among them, there were 2 women, left 4 children behind. And one of the women was a niece to the bishop of the Anglican Church in Yambio, and they just brought their dead bodies to be buried in Yambio on the 3rd of September. This is part of many other ways they've been killing people. And actually, the way they kill people is very inhuman, cutting people into pieces, and at many times in this way, they target very much the church. It brought for us a preoccupation because we wonder why they have very much always targeted people in the churches and prayer time. And they did that in Congo the same way, and now in my diocese. You would be asking me who is giving them the weapon, who is helping them. All of us just remained dumbfounded. We don't know how these rebels stay in the forest for 4 years and are able to have all the ammunition they need to be militarily equipped. How do they get these things? And they're also having telephone connections. How do they keep the conduct? So those are questions that people ask, and we ourselves do not know. you can speculate, you can guess, but you really don't have the scientific finding as to who is behind this. But the real worry, again, with all this process is that it is taking too long. And this rebel movement is growing in number every day. And it's not anymore now made up of Ugandans, because they've been abducting Sudanese, they've been abducting Congolese, they've been abducting Central Africans, and now Chadians. So you get it, it's a kind of a mixed up of people who remain as a time bomb in the forest. And they are becoming stronger each day. And this is a potential problem in the forest. And that's already a regional issue, which one would believe that the countries that are involved in this thing would be able to sit down and get these things reconciled and solved. They opted for military action. And the way it's carried out is not even the way we think it can bring peace. To me, military action has failed, and they have to take another option. We have diplomats, we have lawyers, we have people who can negotiate, we have elders, we have churches. On our part, we are trying, and actually now I've made contact with many of the bishops in Congo, Central Africa, and Uganda, and we are going to add a more series of talking. But we expect also the international community to intervene, because actually, you see, as this problem continues in Western Equatoria, the people in Western Equatoria become dissatisfied with their government. They become dissatisfied with the system because they don't enjoy the peace which was signed in 2005. The consequences is great. It's dangerous. And I always tell my government, if the rebel movement of Kony was a kind of a peaceful movement, it had a very good ideology, it was carrying a promise that could be unfolding in the future, definitely this man would have won the hearts of many young people to join him. But just the way he behaves, then that makes people to shy away. But to me, that's not a really good stand. And we are asking the international community, both our government in the country, to work to put an end to this. And I also have to call on the international community for the whole South Sudan, because there is a lot of uncertainties. Yes, people tell me here in Europe there's going to be another war in South Sudan, it will be like Somalia, a lot of scenarios. Those are very worrying ways of looking at the issue of the South Sudan. It is true it could happen, but the best thing we can do now, the international community can do now, and all the regional countries and together with us, is to prevent the worst scenario by intervening at this moment. Because taking the stand usually done by international community, they come at the end when people are already dead, we have already huge number of humanitarian crises, they come to say they are intervening, they are sending peacekeepers. And these are always a later occasions only to laugh at people who are already dead and already suffering. So I think this is the right time we would ask the international community to come in. And basically also then we have this referendum and election that is before it. We need people to be prepared. The people in South Sudan have never voted for the last 25, 27 years. They need to be educated how to vote and how to handle election and after. And the type of peace observers, election observers we may need now, they have to have a different mandate. Not the type who have always gone to different countries to attend to election, who only write down the reporting, the election was rigged, it was fair. And no, we need those who have power. And even the mandate for the UNIMIS in Sudan have to be rectified. It have to be read to Chapter 7 so that they can protect people's life. Then the same for referendum, that is a very challenging issue for us. We need also a lot of help so that people can decide freely without intimidation for what they would like to be. Of course, it is funny that in Sudan we are talking about separation because we can't accommodate each other. That's funny in today's world, which is becoming too small, where we need only to know how to live with each other. So then we cannot build walls now like Berlin or like what has been tried in Palestine. We need to live together. So Muslims and Christians should live together. But I think the element of fundamentalism within our system is making the things impossible. While you talk of unity to be attractive in North Sudan, you still see the opposite. So at this time, I would love to call on international community very much and all the neighboring countries to take interest now in Sudan and see that the worst does not come, but peace should be promoted and strengthened and consolidated in the country.
It's the Christians who are particularly targeted, are they?
Those are Christians, yes. They went to the church. Those are Christians. Those are Christians who were praying, and they were in Nsara. These were Christians in Congo. These were Christians. So we really doubt what's behind this. Why the Christian churches are targeted, and even at prayers, and then again, the way they kill the people even does not show any recognition for human dignity. So this is for us an attack on the church. Imagine our response to all this as a Christians, we prepared 3 days of prayers. We prayed for 3 days and fasting so that God has to intervene in our system, in our life, in our way of decisions. And Christians were praying for the rebels to be converted, not to be killed, not to be cursed. I could see the Christian faith in the diocese, in the Western Equatoria, the ecumenical approach we had was really a point of conversion. And people were talking blessings, not curse. But the other way around, we receive bad things. Our people are crucified and killed in the way that's very inhuman, I think.
Do people still go to church, or are they frightened to go to church?
They are not frightened. Instead, they are more strengthened. They are more encouraged. Even in Iso, on the 13th, that the people were attacked and the people were crucified on the 13th in Iso. On the 15th, that was the Assumption Sunday, people came to the church and filled the church and they were praying for those who were dead, those who were captured, and also asking God for peace. And it's people are getting more stronger in the face of this persecution. For them, it's a test. It's a test of faith. It's a test of history. And they take strength from God. And we have not lost faith. And we believe at the end of it, Christ will win, because he himself had won the most brutal atrocities in the human history.
And what is your relationship like with Muslims down there then? They're not just Christians in your parish.
I don't have any problem with the Muslims as such, and I've also studied in the north, and quite many, and you know that the majority of believers in Islam are in Sudan are Muslims, and we have a very good working relationship with the moderate Muslim. And what has to be known is that as we talk of Christian persecution by Muslims, it has been a small minority group, powerful enough because they took over the government. They have that government engine to consolidate, to enforce, to empower, to spread Islam in the way that is not perceived as a religion of peace. And that has been our complaint. But there are a huge number of Muslims who do not buy into this system, who get along well with the Christians, who do not have any problem at all. And I also, in my own activities, I'm working so much towards these aspects of interreligious dialogue. And I have many Muslim friends. We are now negotiating with them how we can use our spiritual doctrine, our spiritual richness, that work for peace, to be able to bring peace in Sudan. Those in my diocese, very well, we get along. There's actually no problem as in regard to faith. But the real thing to be contested is the fundamentalism within our country, within our system of law, and that's what is going to force for separation of the Sudan. If that fundamentalism is not eradicated, is not minimized, is not accommodated for the coexistence of everybody in Sudan, it is definitely going to push for separation of South Sudan. So we are asking that we have to accept everybody as they are, with their creed, respect them with their God-given rights. This is what we are advocating for. And we are making use also of those moderate Muslims to campaign for that. And I think we have a very good working relationship as a church in Sudan and me in particular.
Okay, this synod is focusing on reconciliation, justice and peace. Now, you live in a reality where this is difficult to live every day. What does this synod mean to you?
Yeah, this synod really has, to me, has been a moment of reflection, self-conversion and moment of coming to terms with the realities in which I live. I come from a country that has a long history of violence, and me personally lost my mom when I was just 2 months old in the same violence, and she was murdered. She was murdered by military people. So I have taken upon myself many years before interest of resolving and working for peace. So this synod has been an opportunity for me as such to re-examine my attitude towards promotion of peace, and knowing the fact that I have to come to terms really with what I have lived through. The pain, the suffering, the despair, I've worked with that, I've lived with that, and I have to accept it. The topic is difficult. Reconciliation is not a simple thing, it's a process. And the real issue is it needs a space. It needs a place where one can be able to come to terms with himself or herself in order to say, yes, this is my story. Things have gone wrong, things have spoiled, but I still can make a new step. And looking at the same way, this the same for me and for any other Africans, we look at our history, how much we have been humiliated by history, by many things, but we still see this is not the end. There's still the victory. We look at Christ on the cross. He did not remain on the cross. Behind the cross, there is victory, there is joy. So this is a moment for us to convert ourselves and be able to walk out of what has happened in our history and be able to work for betterment of the country, of the continent from which we come. And I think we are also challenged to take it seriously as a part of our apostolate, this work for peace. Because we indeed become the children of God. We need to take it as our daily pastoral work wherever we are. And that's what I'm going to do. And that's what actually I've been trying to do, to spread the spirit of reconciliation and putting in place justice and peace. The real difficulty with this is we are going to work with people who do not understand this language, who do not even believe that what they are doing is just their duty. There's nothing wrong with it. Who will not even be able to listen to us or to me? Who will not see me as an equal? Who don't see that talking about a reconciliation with someone who's different, maybe from a different religion, different ethnic group, he is just a minor person, he's just a lower person. I can't equal up talking to such a person. This is the challenge we are going to find. But of course, it is a duty that we must work to build peace in Sudan. And that's a work we have to take as a church, I have to take as people of Sudan, to work to build a reconciliation in our country. And the other thing, of course, is also to advocate on our behalf with people of other communities, the Friends of Africa, the Europeans, the Arabs, the Asians. We need to capture what can bring peace in Africa. We need respect for ourselves as Africans by promoting good governance and respect for common good and for human life. We also to expect that from our brothers and sisters. Some of them humiliated us so much in the past. I think it's a moment also for them to convert and be able to help Africa and to work together with Africa to come out of this poverty in which we are living and the conflict that is going on. Because at a certain point, when you look at the conflicts going on within our countries and in our continent, you see the string going all the way out of the continent. There are people who like to sponsor those things, who like to benefit while we are all in confusion. And this is also, this synod has helped us to pass this message to them, and also asking our Christian brothers who believe in the value of human life to insist with their government to respect Africa and be able to have system that can promote this continent so that we live together. I belong to human family, human tribe, and that's what I see for everybody. So I think the future is not desperate. What has been very interesting is that our stories are the same. And I see a lot of strong will to make things work. It's a moment that we need to get in dialogue with ourselves at home. We need to talk to ourselves as Africans. We need to talk to our leaders. We need to talk to those who are in charge to see that we get rid of these problems in Africa. Another aspect I actually also I pray for, which also I found very strongly in the synod, was this desire for peace. People seem to be tired. You know, the image you get of Africa is always brutal. There's not that positive thing. And people seem to be tired. That kind of trauma, that kind of low self-esteem is I've seen within the senior people really want to come out of it. We are talking, yes, we have this problem, but we want to do better. We want to come out of this problem. So I think there's that goodwill which is present now in the synod. We are going to carry it with us and invite everybody to work with us so that the continent is freed and that the poverty, the experiment, whatever is exercised within the continent will be done in terms of respect. And then all of us are equally treated. And believe me or not, the issue now that's also touched very much in the synod is the issue of the immigration. It's funny that the way we are handled in some of the European airports is very dehumanizing. And we are also calling here for that human respect that we need as a people. Because also when our brothers come down to us to Africa, we receive them very well. They are given all the high reception they need. It is the same in Africa it needs at this time. But I think much more is it has been a moment of conversion. We need God in our history. We need to put Christ in our history, in the midst of our own working conditions, so that the world can be purified, the world can be brought to perfection, and peace can be stable in our midst, and we indeed can be called children of God. And that's what we really need to make ourselves salty. We have lost our saltiness, and then we need to reinforce it to be salty and be the true light of the world.
You were listening there to the Bishop of Tombura Yambio in southern Sudan, Edward Hiboro Kusala. My thanks go to him for sharing with us these dramatic stories, and also on a more personal note for his words of hope despite it all. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.